Accession number 8730, Reel 1.
Where were you born, Mr. Davis?
I was born at Ammanford.
Which year was that?
In 1918, on May the 15th.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a head mechanic of the Amalgamated Anthracite Collieries at Ammanford.
Where did you go to school?
I went to the local schools that we had in Ammanford, known as the Central School. And from there, I went to a private college known as the Pagefield College.
How old were you when you left school?
I was approximately 15.
To do what?
To go in, first of all, for engineering in the Betters Colliery. My job there was machining and fitting of all parts required for underground use of tools and equipment.
So how did you come to be in the Navy?
Now then. As time went on, until I was 17, I was not only working for the Amalgamated Anthracite Collieries, but I also went down to a local factory, which I requested to go there so that I could get a better background of machinery. They had capstan lathes, they had various types of machines there that I wouldn't have had in the colliery. And I also carried on my education in night school, where I received certificates on engineering at the night school. It was at the age of 21, when the war had started, that I had a choice, because it was compulsory, really, for people to join up, especially at 21, to join either the Army, the Air Force, or the Navy. Well, I went for the Navy because they could give me what I'd been doing over the years, working on various types of machines and lathes, etc. And I was advised that that type of machinery would also be available in the Navy. And after joining the Navy, I proved that they were right, that I'd worked on machinery which was similar to what was now in the Navy, the lathes, the millers, the grinders. And I felt at home immediately. I was back on the machinery there. So I was now at Devonport in the early part of 1940. And having tried and passed my entrance examination to become an engine room artificer, I was first given work by the regulating officers at Devonport to work upon ships which are in the harbour. One was the Exeter, which had only just come back from the River Plate. Another, which I had quite a surprise with, I was told to go down to a certain dock in Devonport, and I was to work on a ship called the Surkoff, which was a French submarine, and I can honestly say that on seeing the ship, I was more than, well, I was really excited, because it was to become the largest submarine in the world, not only carrying some very heavy armament, it also carried its own aircraft. And I was put aboard for a working party, and I remained there until the jobs aboard were done. And again, having come off the Surkoff, I was transferred to a destroyer which required some very heavy and hard work, and that was to change the main bearings, main shaft bearings, which had been damaged during weather and undoubtedly battles earlier. So this particular job was given to 8 ERAs. I was included in the 8, and we allocated our watches, and we were told that the job had to be done within 3 weeks. Well, I suppose we can honestly say we surprised the Navy by saying that we did the job in 7 days. And on completing it, the officer in charge recommended us for leave immediately to go home for the service that we'd done in such a short time. He was more than pleased. But before we went home on leave, we did sea trials for this particular job, and they proved successful. So time was now going by in the Navy, and it was now early May when I was allocated to join the Repulse at Greenock. I took a party of 20-odd men up to Greenock, and on arriving at the Royal Naval Barracks there and reporting to the regulating officer, we were told that the Repulse had not arrived and we should make our way back to Devonport. This instruction was carried out, and on the same afternoon as we'd arrived, we were on our way back again to Devonport via London, because of the blitz that had occurred on the railway on the West Country. We arrived the following morning at Devonport, only to be re-instructed that the Repulse had now arrived at Greenock, and we were now to board a train to go back up. This time the ship was near the docks at Greenock, and by way of a liberty boat we were taken aboard the Repulse. Well, it was undoubtedly a massive ship, something that I could be really proud of, and yet rather nervous because our whereabouts was like being the first time in London. You just didn't know where you were. But within a matter of a few hours, we didn't have much time to get to know the ship. We were ordered out of Greenock and immediately set to sea, because we were told once outside the harbour that we were to make contact with HMS Hood, and several other ships were to be in convoy with us. Well, this was now quite an experience, because the following morning we were heading up towards Iceland, and in the convoy, I believe I'm right in saying that there were 22 destroyers. There was 11 cruisers, and there were 3 capital ships. What do you call capital ships? You had the King George V, you had the Repulse, and we had an aircraft carrier. I don't think the word fear ever entered my mind at all, as each hour while I was aboard, I continually had instructions as to what and where to go and what to do. My job was that in the boiler rooms. The ship itself, built in around the 1915 era of the First World War, had 6 boiler rooms. They weren't numbered, but they were given an alphabetical number, and that was from A to F. The A boiler room, which consisted of 3 boilers, then the B consisted of another 7, and the others 8 each. I think, as I said, that the whole lot totaled 42 Babcock and Wilcock boilers. They were high pressure boilers. So I got to know them and learn them, and found that their work was hard but yet interesting. And I got to know so many of the workmates that were there as stokers, chief stokers. And we carried our duties according to the requests of your superior officers, which were lieutenants and commanders.
Was this convoy in pursuit of the Bismarck?
The convoy was in pursuit of the Bismarck, yes. One thing that had not been arranged, because as you know, I stated earlier, the ship had only just arrived at Greenock when I came aboard, and it hadn't had sufficient time in the harbour to refuel. So now we were off after the Bismarck in the middle of this convoy of cruisers and destroyers, this escort that we had, and we were running each hour short of oil fuel. We'd gone quite a mileage north of Iceland when information was given to us. Information was usually put up on boards in various parts of the ship as to what was actually happening or going to happen. While you were in harbour, of course, this information was taken down, and no instructions would be given. But once at sea, the information was given to everybody, because we were a unit. And we were told that the Bismarck had been made contact with the Hood, and within a short time the Hood had been sunk. So two ships were actually involved, the Bismarck and the Prince Eugen. And we were told finally that through just one reason, and that was that we lacked oil fuel, that we'd have to pull out of the action. At this particular moment, I'd managed to be changing action stations, because every so often aboard ship you might have to change action stations. I was getting near the top deck when I could actually see the smoke just over the horizon of where the Bismarck was supposed to be. And it had been hit by the Prince of Wales, I believe, and it was trailing a certain amount of smoke where it had been hit. Well, we couldn't fire, it was too far away, but on pulling out of this convoy of ships, the King George and this aircraft carrier we had behind us, and I watched for a few minutes the aircraft leaving the aircraft carrier with torpedoes, that we headed away, and immediately we were told that by our captain, and I believe there were several captains aboard the Repulse. The number I'm not quite sure, but I know there was an engineer captain, there was a gunnery captain, there was a marine captain. But to come back to it, we were told by our captain of the ship, who answered to the name of Captain Tennant, that we were to make contact with a tanker off the coast of Newfoundland near Belle Island in Nova Scotia. And immediately we'd have made contact with this tanker, we were to proceed after the Prince Eugen, which was until then escorting the Bismarck. Well, we were unfortunate, but while heading towards the area of Belle Island in Nova Scotia, we got into an area of heavy weather, which was the result of a hurricane over the coast of America at the time that had come back out to sea, and we headed right into the center of it. And for 3 days, we had a very rough time. Well, we headed finally towards Belle Island, only to find that the tanker that should have supplied us with oil had a bows just above the surface of the water, and we watched her go under from a distance. We made immediately to run out again from that area, and we used whatever oil that we had, diesel oil, anything we could, to keep our boilers going until another tanker arrived and we refueled at sea. And we found that our instructions from there was to proceed into Belle Island, where we arrived and were given the greatest kindness that any people from this country could have ever had by the local people of Belle Island, which is north of St. John's in Newfoundland. We left this area, and instructions again were placed on the boards that we were to proceed down through the Gulf of St. Lawrence to Halifax. It is really interesting traveling this distance, because here again the kindness of people was such that a trawler just pulled up against our ship, and they handed over, must be tons of salmon which they'd caught, and they were given, we were each given approximately a pound or more of salmon each during the course of the coming week. And that was a gift of the captain of this particular fishing vessel that come up near our side then. Well, we entered Halifax. We entered Halifax for a special reason. Our ship had been quite damaged in the gale, which had happened a week or so earlier, and repair work was put to hand right away. I had several other duties besides that of an ERA. Now I was in charge of a landing party, and I had patrol duty in Halifax for the first couple of days. And at that time, if I can remember correctly, they were celebrating something that we don't do in our own country, but they were celebrating the birthday of King George the VI. And it was quite a celebration. We were invited into various places, and the food was given to us, and cigarettes and what had you. And a wonderful welcome was given right through the area of Halifax to the compliment that we had aboard ship then. Well, having done the repairs for the next few days, we were now given orders that we were leaving harbour and we were picking up a convoy. This convoy was heading for one particular area, and that was Murmansk, which is in northern Russia. We also had troop ships in the convoy, which were Canadians coming over to Britain. So in the parting of the ways, by the time we reached the western area of Ireland, one section was to leave us to go to Britain, while we carried on to take this convoy towards Murmansk. A few incidents happened on that convoy. We went into a U-boat pack, which consisted of maybe 4, 5, or even 6 submarines. And we were delighted to hear that 3 submarines had been destroyed, or if not totally, were put out of action. Information was given that 2 submarines had survivors picked up, but 1 submarine lost all hands. These are U-boats, of course. So we headed north, and there were no problems with enemy aircraft. We were too far out at sea near the coast of Greenland and Iceland, and we covered an area around the Denmark Straits, I believe that's the area, where we left the convoy, which was taken over by escort destroyers and cruisers to go into Murmansk. Orders were given to proceed back to Greenock,